overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change, to create a brand new life. I am overflowing.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
Thank you, Teresa and John. So you made me cry again. Thank you so much. You know, it's so funny. When I do a memorial service, I would have done that at your mom's, Christie's. I always play that song, that we're held in the hands of grace, forever safe in the arms of love, like a child who needs protection from our mother's warm embrace. What if we're always being embraced by the mother? I mean, we have our physical mothers. Some are in form. Some are in the invisible realm. I'm still held in the embrace by my mother, truly. They don't leave us. You'll learn that after a while. Anyway, it's a blessing. Sometimes I hear her telling me to do things that she would want me to do. Take care of your sister. She needs your help right now. I just found out that my twin sister went crazy the other day. I got a call. Trey and I just came back from the mountains. She had a urinary tract infection. She thought that her ex-husband was in a paper bag, and she was trying to stab it. The neighbors called the police. They picked her up. She was in a mental ward for 11 days, and it was the greatest gift for my family because now I have my sister back. She's not really crazy. Something was going on in her biological system that had her believe her ex-husband was in a paper bag and she wanted to, yeah. So I heard my mother saying, you need to help your sister, you need to help your sister. And this beautiful man that came from North, he reminded me this morning that sometimes everything has to fall apart for something good to happen in your life. So what if the paradox is that when life gives us those 2x4s, that there's something in that for all of us to shift us, to make that radical shift? For those of you who are here for the first time, one, and for those of you who are really here in this moment, hopefully, I'm doing a series based on Jack Kornfield's book called The Wise Heart. And I love, it's like Pema Chodron. She wrote a book called Living Beautifully with Uncertainty and Change. And there's something about the Buddhist tradition, how they meet the suffering of the planet in a skillful sort of way, if that's possible, to meet it with a skillful sort of way. Pema Chodron talks about a little word called shempa. And shempa is this Buddhist phrase that is that which hooks you, that which gets you off center, that which gets you into a reactive mode. And then we're operating at the level of effect, you can imagine, and we're trying to tackle life. So what if we could identify those triggers that hook our shempa, and oh, there is that again. Jack Kornfield uses the Buddhist terminology as well. And he says, when I go into a hospital room and there's some situation that's rather uncomfortable, he said, I put Kuan Yin on one side and I put the Buddha on the other. Now we're talking metaphor here, right brain thinking. Kuan Yin is the goddess, the bodhisattva of compassion. So you're walking into a scenario with this compassionate nature. The Buddha represents equanimity. No matter what it is, I can align myself with peace. It's not good, it's not bad, it just is. So I can have peace on one side, compassion on the other, and then I can enter in to the mouse infestation in my garage. Not thinking that I need a bunch of traps to kill the mice, but perhaps the little mouse is saying, clean out your garage. You know, all that's happened is a subtle shift of attention from reacting to the outer to a compassionate response from this place that we have within us all. Jack Kornfield quoted The Course in Miracles, and he said, if you knew there was something working through you, you would never feel alone. If you knew that there was something working through you, you would never feel alone. You know, I was working in my garden 35 years ago. I was younger than you. I was digging up, and I had my little headset on, as we do, and I hear Ella Fitzgerald singing Embraceable You. And I remember with my shovel right there in the dirt, I was hearing the universe. It's like you standing at the window and hearing the birds for the first time. Locke Kelly, this wonderful book that I'm going to teach, he talks about finding glimpses of when you know that you are aligned with Kuan Yin and the Buddha, a moment in life. So she saw it at her kitchen window in the morning with the wind blowing and the chimes. That was a glimpse. This is what it's all about. I'm digging in the earth. Ella's singing, embrace me, my sweet embraceable you. And I'm hearing the love of God sing to this lowly little gardener, saying, this something is always there, and it loves us so much, and it's telling me, come to mama, come to mama, come to mama, do, you know? And then it says, just one look at you, I feel my heart grow tipsy in me. This something loves us so much that it literally, that it aches for us. Ajahshanti talks about this impulse that we all have within us, that something, that internal ache that has been with us our whole life. And if we do everything and we fail to connect with this ache, and so Carlos Castaneda talked about that same invisible something to know we're never alone. He said, what if our whole life is about finding ways to make that essential connection to that hidden wholeness, to that love that wants to embrace us? You know, it's very interesting with all those that were protesting the environment, and I was so proud of people all over the planet. Jack Kornfield says, this lovely Buddhist man, if you're going to pursue something that you're that passionate about, make sure you do it out of love and not out of anger or out of they're bad, they're wrong, and we're going to go against the oil companies. Make sure you do it because you love the planet. So what if, now I'm working on the Compass of the Heart this Sunday, and there's a whole chapter in the book, The Wise Heart by Jack Kornfield, talking about the compass of the heart. And he says, could we set this compass, this intention, to a higher order of being in the world? You know, and he talks about a short-term intention and a long-term intention. So a short-term intention would be something like this. You're driving down the road and somebody cuts you off and you're riding your bike and a dog runs up and attacks you. A short-term intention would be, can I breathe? Can I align myself to this holy instant? Can I not run away with a shempa and reactive nature? I'm going to get even with that dog and kick him and then go off my bike and get in a... She knows what I'm talking about. So, yeah, the short version of the compass of the heart is when life gives you those little moments, can I take a breath? Now, Jack Kornfield talks about karma. And, you know, karma is cause-effect. It's not cause and effect. It's cause-effect. It's what we reap in life. And so he says there's bad karma and good karma. So he said, I'll give you an example of bad karma. Bad karma, your neighbors are cutting down all the trees, all that beautiful shade that you so love here in the South, but they find the trees a nuisance. So they cut all their trees down and it irritates you. So you get in your car and you decide, I'm going to get even with him, and you push on the gas pedal and you run into his hedges and they all come down and you think, there, bad karma. They arrest you, throw you in jail. Now, your intention was not pure. Good karma is you get in your car and the gas pedal hits the floor and your car is out of control. You lift your hands up in the air, it crashes into the hedges, and you hit the barn and they come over. Are you okay? How can I help you? Is there something I can do to help you? Good intention, same karma. So Jack says, what is your intention? And that's where he says, if you're going to pursue something environmentally, like Lee and Nancy did, I praise you for that. Do it out of love for something, that you care about it, you know? And then he talks about long-term intention. Ah, the long-term intentions. Trey and I, years ago, you know, you'll have those little glimpses of when the universe is giving you a momentary opening on how to be in the world. And there's always been suffering on the planet, always. And so we were at the Georgia Conservancy years ago when I was trying to find my way. Maybe I was your age, Adam, and they were talking about the environment. And this man from the hills of North Carolina, he says, one thing I've learned in life is that you only can create your own island of decency. You know, you can think you're going to fix the world out there, but I've learned to just take care of my own family, my own home, my own backyard. And Trey and I looked at each other, and we thought, it's enough to create your own island of decency. You know, everybody's been talking about Downton Abbey, the movie, and I saw all 6 years of it. But Trey, in his wisdom, said, you know, I can't remember the last episode of Downton Abbey. I got to get that Southern accent away. So last night we watched the last episode of Downton Abbey. And this ancient devotion to a hierarchy, to a lineage, to a family, to a home, to an estate. And as I'm watching their devotion to this whole idea of a life that's long gone, it's 100 years ago, I realized that each of us has our own little Downton Abbey. I have my own little house. You know, Kim was talking about how I can dream about the beautiful Tudor cottage. But then again, I have a little craftsman bungalow with an old dog lying on the front porch and a one-eyed pug by the fireplace. Now, I can sit there and dream of Downton Abbey, or I can say, I have Downton Abbey right in my own backyard. I don't need to look any further. So then we look at these long-term intentions, and the Buddhist way is, don't make the goal, the outer, as your intention. The dream is not to have Downton Abbey, because you can get Downton Abbey and you'll still be miserable. But what if you find Downton Abbey in your heart? And then you can have a little tent under the trees, and that will be your Downton Abbey. It's never outside yourself. So one of the beautiful things on this spiritual journey, I was listening to a lot of John O'Donohue. I sent a few of them. He says, John O'Donohue says, you know, it's all about coming home to your heart, to the hearth of your heart. You know, and this is about the wisdom of the heart. So what if that the greatest journey any of us can make is that 18 inches from the head to the heart? And when you're living in the heart, and you're following the heart's desire, like Seamus reminded me that the acorn dreams of the forest. So what does your heart dream of? Does it dream of swimming with the dolphins? And if you got to swim with the dolphins, what would that give you? Well, it would give you a sense of intimacy, wouldn't it? A sense of belonging. Now, you can swim with the mice just as well as swim with the dolphins, because it's all the same presence. It's all the same life revealing itself in multiplicity. Adam was sharing with me, he was sitting under the trees in his own little Downton Abbey under the tree over there, and he was watching a spider. You know, spiders are amazing because from within them, there's produced this silken thing, and they literally can drop, but they trust that they will drop and stop. And then someone can walk through their web and destroy it. Hey, I'll just build a new web. So what if our life is about creating the newness? You know, creating the newness. And so it's very important for us. Jody was reminding that we surround ourselves with people that help us expand, that bring us alive. Not the ones that contract us and judge us and would have us be self-critical, but to be around those that expand us and open us into what John O'Donohue calls the divine imagination. So what if God in the individual reveals itself as this divine imagination, as this right-brained possibility? I was telling Tia, when I was up in the mountains with Jeff Foster and Matt Licata, they said it's very important to have right-brain relationships with people. I thought that was interesting, a right-brain relationship. So we're not talking in the left logical, this is what you need to do to get your stuff together, and this is the ways, and this is how you do it. That's all left brain. Right brain is, I saw the calendar this morning at home, and there were two otters, and they were lying on their back, and one little otter was holding the other little otter, and I thought, Tia always likens herself to an otter. And I think of Tia, she is my little otter that's holding me, you know? And I said to Tia last week, I said, you know, sometimes people want to fix me. And last Sunday's talk was, let's the sacred shift from healing each other to holding each other. And when I was up there in the mountains of Colorado, and they seemed to say, embrace those abandoned parts of yourself. And every time they say that, there's this little boy that comes up in me who I somehow made wrong because he was sensitive, he was fragile, he would run away. And when I go to these retreats and I don't have to be the pastor, that little boy comes up. And I shared with this large group of people, how do I integrate him into my life when I go back to Huntsville? Because I have the adult minister, Dr. David Leonard, and then I have this little boy who's sensitive, who wants to play, who likes to look at leaves and fall into them and play with spiders, and who would definitely save a mouse. I found a little mouse in our garden once. He was so cute with his little wiggling nose, Joanne. I mean, those little wiggling noses are just not your dog. Little mice have little wiggling noses, and Trey thought I was crazy. Now, we saw rats the other day. I'm not so thrilled with rats. They're kind of scary looking. But the little mouse was adorable. And so the little boy in me, when he shared with this large group, after I left, everybody came up and they wanted to fix me. They did this tapping therapy. I can tap and help heal him. And you know what my little boy wanted to say? He doesn't want to be healed. He just wants to be held. He just wants to be seen. He wants to be allowed to be playful because he holds the mystery. So what if in the wisdom of the heart, it's not about getting rid of the stuff that somehow we have made wrong, but it's allowing those unembraced parts of ourselves to have space to be held. So Adam was sharing with me, he had a moment of compassion and then he got angry at his compassion. How beautiful is that? I shouldn't have been angry at the compassion. I said, make room for the anger. Make room for the fear. We were coming back from the mountains yesterday. Now, I hope you won't mind this. We went to Highlands, North Carolina, and every day we had a fire in the fireplace because it was so cold up there. I know, isn't that delicious? Anyway, we're coming down from the mountains. I just thought I'd rub that in. That's why we go there. And we're coming down from the mountains, and Bert starts to shake. He's my old American bulldog. And he's standing between the front seat and the back seat, and his whole body is shaking. Now, 4.5 hours of a shaking dog between the front seat and the back seat. And as he's shaking, drool is dripping down his mouth in puddles of drool. And the one-eyed pug is on my lap, and all the drool is landing on the pug, which I thought is good. It's not landing on my lap. So I finally said, Trey, you need to pull the car over. And he pulls off this twisty road by the Ocoee Rapids, and I get in the back seat. And all of a sudden, the pug gets in the back seat, and he's lying on my lap. And Bert's sitting there, and I'm putting my arm around him, and he's shaking, but he's shaking in my arms. You talk about being held in the hands of grace. So all the way home, I'm holding this old bulldog who's shaking and dripping drool all over the pug, and the pug's sleeping there. And it was just a beautiful moment of holding, because I can't fix him. And as soon as we pulled into that little road in Alabama and he smelled whatever he smells with his nose, because you know those dogs have, they knows what a nose should be. Noses, their noses are magical. He went back into normal Bert. So what if all of that was there for me? Adam and I were talking earlier, you know, we talked these four levels of consciousness in the New Thought teaching, and the lowest level of consciousness is the victim consciousness, where somehow you think things happen to you. And then you're constantly at war with the outer, with conditions, with judgments, with people. And then you live in victim mode. And we have a little poster out there, and it's very, very powerful because it's all about a shift of the way we see things. It said, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. So what if instead of saying, my poor sister in Idaho has got a problem, what if saying, what a blessing she had when someone called the police and said this woman could be self-destructive because she's got a chemical imbalance, because her ex-husband's in a paper bag and she's wanting to kill the paper bag. I mean, really, there was a blessing in disguise for all of that. And it's thank God it took this to wake her up from a whole pattern that was unconscious. So life is amazing how it gives you these beautiful gifts of freedom. The power of intention. Wayne Dyer did a whole series on the power of intention, and he put it on PBS. And he talked about, could we connect to the intention of the soul or the intention of the heart? You know, several of you are at turning points in your life. And one of the beautiful questions you get to ask is, as I go through this shift, am I choosing to make that shift from a heart place, or am I trying to shame myself into another way of doing things? Am I choosing what I'm choosing? It's a question. To be more alive or to be more controlled and programmed by what I think I should be doing? You know, I don't know how many degrees. I was telling Anastasia when I was in my 30s, Trey got his master's in teaching, and he wanted me to go back and get my master's in education so we could both be school teachers. That was his dream for him, and he wanted it to be my dream. And so I had the degree in horticulture, I had the degree in dance, and now I'm gonna get an education degree so I can become a school teacher. And I went back, and I was my first day in student teaching, and the bells would go off, the students would sit, and after one day in the classroom, that voice, it was connecting to me, and it said, this job will kill you. And I went home that day, and he came home from teaching, and I said, I'm not going back. What do you mean you're not going back? He said, our whole life is about this dream. We'll both be teachers. We'll have the summers off. I said, that was your dream. I can't do it. And in that moment, he said to me, well, I'll just say one thing. He said, you've created a void in your life, so but be very careful what you fill that void with. And I knew he was right, because all that energy had been putting into that dream of being a school teacher. And he said, but whatever you do, don't become a minister. Never thought of that. I had just been attending this crazy center in Atlanta. And so I think that once we let go of this dream that we've told ourselves and we're willing to listen to something that's greater, it's causing us to move into a new beginning. And it's always a new beginning. I feel more alive now than I've ever felt about my ministry. And I'm really thrilled to be doing the Locke Kelly material, because Locke Kelly comes from the Buddhist tradition. And even though I love to do John O'Donohue and Mark Nepo, all this heart stuff, Locke Kelly comes from the mind place. And he says, we're trapped in the Shempa of the mind. So through Buddhist practices, and it's practice, practice, practice for these 9 weeks, it starts by unhooking yourself from the narrative of the mind. You know, the mind's always wanting to comment about the weather, about everything. So what if, when Mike Trey says to me all the time, what do you think about that? I said, I try not to. So the very first thing he says is, when we unhook from a thought pattern, he says, you're still there, but you're not operating from thought. Awareness is still there. So he says, then let's take your attention to seeing. Now you're very aware that seeing is taking place. You're looking around the room, my beautiful new shirt, don't you love it? But there's no thought going. So awareness is aware of what it's seeing. He says, now let's move into sound. So awareness now is absorbed by sound. You know, I live with a spa on my radio when I get in the car. This beautiful music, and I'm driving to the center this morning, and she says, move into the moment, spa. And I thought, you know, that's the intention. The short-term intention, be in the moment. In this moment, am I going to move into the thought that's all filled with reaction? Or can I be in an open-hearted awareness with what is, with Buddha on my right and Kuan Yin on my left, stepping into the sacred moment with the long-term intention to create my own island of decency, with the long-term intention to smile at my neighbors when I see them? I made a little list of what my long-term intentions were. I vow to be kind to people. You know, His Holiness the Dalai Lama says, kindness is my religion. The word mindfulness means to be kind in the midst of whatever is happening. So when the anger arises, could I be kind when anger arises? So my long-term vow is to be kind. When my twin sister goes crazy, I'll know it's a chemical imbalance. Instead of thinking she was literally crazy, she had a chemical imbalance. What a gift of awareness. My vow is to be present in every moment, to not want to live in the future. The egoic mind lives in the past, and it lives in the future. But the soul lives in the eternal now moment, which is always alive. Could we make it a vow to live in present moment awareness? I make a vow to listen deeply. I loved what Adam said in the revealing circle. And you know these revealing circles, these classes, and the satsangs on Wednesday night, Locke Kelly talks about what satsang really is. And he says, when you find the truth awakening in you, and you're sitting in a circle, and you're deep listening to each one as they share from that truth, it's the same awareness that's hearing itself in other, because there's only one here revealing itself. So we come together when two or more are gathered in my name, in my nature, the nature of the awakened Christ consciousness, we're all potentiating each other. We're all the acorns dreaming of the forest that we all potentially are. So what if, let me give you a little taste of Mark Nepo. And this is about embracing the inner other, the something that's within all of us. You know, we sang Embraceable You, it wants us to embrace it. Well, could we embrace this something within us that has the wisdom of the heart linked to it? You know, really just think about, well, don't think. Feel into what the heart would say. And here's how Mark does it. He does it so poetically. It's short. He says, I don't know why, but for all that I've been through, almost dying twice, almost living, seeking love till I've become love, seeking truth till I've become the question, and for all of it, I'm certain that inside every nut is a seed, that inside every fear is a pin of light, that inside every desperation there is a drop of being, that inside every loss there's an inch of what could never be lost, and inside every burden there's a pearl of worth, and I don't know why. See, the mind wants to know why. But I'm certain that this pearl of worth is waiting for all of us to dive to the bottom of all trouble, to pry the shell of burden open, and to bring the gem that we were born to carry into the world to surface. Wow. So there is that which is within you, it says in the Gospel of Thomas. And if you liberate that which is within you, that which is within you will save you. If you do not liberate that which is within you will destroy you. Let those who have ears to hear, hear. Oh, I love it when they say that.
Well, I don't know what that means. Well, maybe you're not supposed to. Maybe you just kind of feel into it, you know.
That's why the dogs are such great teachers. I love it when Michael puts pictures of his dog on Facebook as his cover photo. And I look into those deep eyes of his dog, and they're empty. They're empty of egoic self, and yet they're full of presence. So what if we're here to meet in that presence? And that's the connection. And each one of us has to find that sacred connection for themselves. You know, crazy people like me find it when they play in the dirt and when they're working with feeding the birds in the garden. It's like they come and they talk to me. I know I sound crazy. But what if we make that connection everywhere in life with trees? I have this intimate relationship with trees. I was told that when I was kind of young and crazy, like you, Adam, if you take off your shoes and go barefoot in the grass will de-ionize you. It feels almost like heaven when I, as an adult, take off my shoes and go barefoot in the grass and feel that connection to the mother. Or to just lie down on the earth. And you know, my Burke, you know, he lies down and, you know, he's on the floor and I kind of worry about him sometimes. So I just get on his level and I lie down and put my head by his head.
Teresa told me to do that. She said, you know, he's confused. So I'll say, Bert, how you doing? He says, well, what you doing down here? I said, well, you know, I like being close to you because you're my guru. And he says, well, I know I'm your guru because, face it, you need a lot of help.
And, and you know, it's to make those intimate connections with life, even with a dog, or maybe especially with a dog, because they're pure. They don't have that egoic filter of past and future and wanting to put their good outside themselves. They're fully present in the moment. So find out who your gurus are in this world. You know, that little boy that I found in the mountain, he's one of my gurus. What's his name? Alan Cohen wrote a book called Let Joy Be Your Compass. And he opens the book by telling a story. He was on his one of his speaking gigs, and he was staying in someone's house. You know, that's what you do when they put you up in the guest bedroom. And he woke up, and there was a little girl standing over his bed, Molly. And he says, well, hi, Molly. And she says, hi. She says, what are you going to do today? And he says, well, I have a book signing, and then I have to go here. And he says, what are you going to do? And she says, oh, play. That's all I do is play. I have fun. And he said, I realized that Molly, this little five-year-old, she had a PhD in having fun and knowing how to play, and I had totally forgotten how to play. So what if we could, in our looking, in our seeking, seek until you find. You remember in the Gospel of Thomas, in all your seeking, seek until you find. And he says, and when you find, you'll be greatly disturbed. And when you are greatly disturbed, you'll be filled with awe. And when you are filled with awe, you will have dominion over your world. Let those who have ears to hear, hear. Well, in seeking, begin to find that it was right there. The playfulness, the innocence, that little boy's always been there. I'd abandoned him. He's the one that holds the mystery. Could I let him more into my life because he looks with the eyes of wonder? You'll be greatly disturbed because it was there all along. Ernest Holmes says the thing you're looking for, you're looking with. It's not outside you. It's this inner something that the Course in Miracles talks about. You're never alone because it's always in there saying, embrace me. I am the one. I am the lover that you've been seeking. You know, in every burden, there is a ray of light. In every conflict, sometimes things fall apart. Locke Kelly. You know, my friend from New York, Locke Kelly, the reason he got started on his search for spirituality, he said his father had Lou Gehrig's disease, and he said, we went through this long dying process with my father. Shortly after my father died, my grandmother, who was the bulwark of the family, she made her transition, and then my best friend died in a car accident. All three within a matter of a very short time, and the grief was overwhelming, and strangely, it's what broke him open and took him on his journey of self-discovery. So what if the awakened heart needs the broken heart for it to emerge? And sometimes we get so caught up in this idea of who we are, this safe image of what life should look like, that we fail to take risks and to step into the unknown. Or as Shakespeare says, we'd rather bear those ills we have than fly to others we know not of. And thus our conscience doth make cowards of us all. And thus the native hue of resolution, to have this life abundant, is sicklied o'er by the pale cast of thought. And enterprises of great pitch and motion, with this regard their currents turn awry and lose the name of action. We don't move because we talk ourselves into doing the same thing that we've always done. And if you do the same thing that you've always done, you'll always get what you've always gotten. So what if the invitation is to every day awaken with the beginner's mind? Oh God, I have another day here on planet Earth. I can stand at the window and I can hear the birds sing. I can chart a course from the heart, not from my plans, my strategy, and postponing my gratification for someday when I will be, you know, an attorney. I used to think I was going to be an attorney. I heard that same voice my first day in law school. This job will kill you. I've learned to listen to that voice. What if that voice is trying to move us forward in life into a compassionate way of being in the world? That it wants to play. I remember Jeff Foster said to me when my little boy showed up on the mountain, and Jeff very sweetly said, "What does your little boy want from you? Have you asked him?" And he, just like that little Molly said, he wants to play. You know, he wanted to have fun. What does he want to do now? I said, he wants to run away from all of you because he doesn't feel safe here. And he says, well, you know that little boy is your guru, don't you? He says, would you be willing to listen to him when he's sharing his wisdom, his sensitivity, his playfulness, his creativity? He wants to just play with Jane and make Christmas ornaments. You know, he's a crazy little kid. Is it okay for him to surface? He wants to go and rescue the mice from the mice infestation over here because he loves mice and he likes aardvarks. Or not aardvarks, armadillos. It's an A word. So as I was listening to John O'Donohue, you know, he's one of my heroes. He's from Ireland, and he died very suddenly at 52. And he loves to talk about death. You know, he says, because, you know, as a minister, he was a Catholic priest for like 20 years, and he got out of the priesthood because there was too much sin. He couldn't handle it, he said. So he left the priesthood, but it took him on a whole nother journey where he went within and he talked about this intimate relationship to this something that we all have, this longing of the heart. And he talked about, and I always recommend this to people who are going to get married, his signature book called The Anamkara. And the Anamkara means the soul friend. And you need to find that soul friend first within yourself and then within the other. You know, and it's rare. You know, Jody and I were talking about, surround yourself with your Anamkaras, with your spiritual lovers, with those that expand you, not with those that are contracting. And, you know, they're fine. You know, you can handle an evening, maybe a dinner, but basically you want to be around the Anamkara, the ones that make your soul flower like your dog. And so, yeah, he made his transition at 52. And on his epitaph, there's a beautiful saying of his that says, may your life flow like the river, surprised at your own unfolding. So what if we could live, our long-term intention is to live in a natural flow. This is Locke Kelly's whole purpose of living effortlessly with the way of effortless mindfulness, is to live in flow where you're not the doer, but there's something doing you. You know, that's that third level of consciousness. There's the to me, the victim. There's the for me, where you recognize that everything serves. But then it's important to get to that third kingdom, which is the through me consciousness, that there's something that moves through all of us. David's not really doing this talk. When he gets out of the way, some creative intelligence can flow. And it's always been there. You know, and he says, and you'll get these moments and these glimpses. So John O'Donohue talks about the sacredness of being with someone when they make their transition. And he said, I was with this crusty old man once. You know, he was a seafarer, and he'd lived a wild, crazy life. And so I did my Catholic thing. I absolved him of all his sins, said, oh, now you're ready to die. And he says, do you have any comments you'd like to say before you die? And he says, well, you know, he says, all I can say, it's been one hell of a hug while I've been here. And then he took his last breath. And he says, what a beautiful thing to say, one hell of a hug while I was here. You know, he says, how many people can say that at that moment when they step into that next dimension? And you know, there are no accidents. I think the most beautiful, and I was thinking of those glimpses of the divine and how sacred that time is. And I've been with many people at their transition too, but my favorite and the deepest was Vandana Srivastava when she was so, so struggling with life at the very end. She was jaundiced. she was suffering in her body, and her husband loved her so much. She had a little son. Nobody wanted her to make her transition. And so I had just been to Vancouver to a minister's conference, and there are no accidents, and we were meditating. They were doing one of the Vedic hymns of creation. And it was one of those moments, you're in meditation, and they're doing Swami Vivekananda, the Vedic hymn of creation. And they said, and there was a spark of light, and everything, you know, was born out of this light. And something in my subjective memory had a remembrance of that light being born in me. You know, you mentioned falling into a leaf. I was falling into flowers. I couldn't stop crying. What's going on with David Leonard? I felt this light within me, and I couldn't relate to people. And right after I came back from that, I get the phone call. She's dying. come to the emergency room. And because I'd had that experience, when I asked them to leave the room and I held her hands and she was so desperate with her panting and looking at me in the eyes, I said, "Beloved, let's both move into our light body." I said, "You move into your light body and I'll move into my light body." And she's looking at me just completely connected in the eyes, just like I am with my dog. And I said, "Now breathe with me." And her breath was very, very troubled. And I'm breathing deep and slow. And I watched her breath just align with my breath effortlessly. And we were in this flow together. And I said, "Krishna was her reference point. She loved Krishna. It was her Jesus." I said, "Krishna's waiting for you." And she loved to dance. I says, "Do you feel my arms around you?" I said, "Well, let's dance right into the light. Krishna's waiting." And literally, we danced right into the light, and the breath just left. It was one of the most grace-filled moments. Now, she gave me the huge gift. Sometimes we think we're helping others. They help us by bringing us into their experience. Probably the most beautiful Anamkara moment of a lifetime. So I'm warning all of you. That's what I expect. When my moment comes, you're going to take my hands and you're going to dance me into the light, okay? Who knows who it'll be, but... So I wanted to give you a taste of John O'Donohue. And this is his blessing. It's a book of blessings. And he says, we are here. In Ireland, you don't say, "How you doing?" You say, "May the sun shine on you and your beautiful family all the days of your life." And he says, we live a life of blessing the other. And so it's just a book filled with blessings. I read a beautiful one at Christie's mother's memorial on the death of a loved one and how they don't die and how seamy. You know, Gigi was saying she came over to water the plants, and every time she walks in the house, she saw Smudge. "Where are you, Smudge? Where are you?" And Smudge died, you know, recently. But she's still hanging around. Baby Speck still in her bedroom. She goes running down the hallway. You know, I hear those little click of the heels. Bert knows that. So he talks about a new beginning. How many of you are launching into a new beginning? Hopefully all of you. Thank you. And this is what he says. Now, remember, we get caught up in an idea of ourselves that's perhaps stagnant, that we feel safe and secure, and life is calling us to a greater order of being. So this is one of my favorite things that he wrote. It's a blessing for a new beginning. And let's make this new beginning, put your hands over your heart if you want to play with the heart space. And he says, in the out-of-the-way places of the heart, where your thoughts never think to wander, this beginning has been quietly forming, waiting until you were ready to emerge. For a long time, it has watched your desire, feeling the emptiness growing inside you, noticing how you willed yourself on, still unable to leave what you had already outgrown. It watched you play with the seduction of safety and the gray promises that sameness whispered. It heard the waves of turmoil rise and relent. It wondered, would you always live like this? Then, the delight, when your courage kindled and out you stepped onto new ground, your eyes young again, with energy and dream and hope, a path of plentitude opening before you and yet unknown. Though your destination is not yet clear, you can trust the promise of this opening. Unfurl yourself into the grace of beginning. That is as one with your own life's desire, that is at one with the compass of your heart. Awaken your spirit now to adventure. Hold nothing back. Learn to find ease in risk, and soon you will be home in this new rhythm, for your soul senses the world that awaits you. Your soul senses the world that awaits you. So let's rest in the soul, this eternal aspect of our being. This soul that Emerson speaks of as the oversoul that we all share, the invisible part of ourselves that was never born, never dies, and yet is fully present right now, that longs to live this life. And it asks us the question, can we be our own Anamkara? Can we be the friend of our own soul? Can we listen to it when it wants to get out of stagnant waters and eddies and whirlpools where we're going round and round and round? Could we learn to set the course of our heart's compass in a new direction with a beginner's mind, not having to create a treasure map of what it's supposed to look like, but let it unfold itself in a surprising sort of way? And then our job is to be curious and fascinated with how this new life wants to emerge. Just like when you throw the seeds out in a garden, you don't know what it's going to look like. And usually it's so much more beautiful than anything you could have conjured up with your own senses. So what if our life is like this? It's a great mystery, and it unfolds itself in surprising ways when we get out of the way. And so right now, I invite you to set an intention. A short-term intention, perhaps, in this holy instant, to court the questions, how can I be there for you, my beloved? Ask our own heart that question. And then maybe the long-term intention of the compass of the heart. Can I vow to be kind. I vow to be gentle with myself. I vow to listen to that still small voice that doesn't get louder but gets clearer when I become still. And so I hear this beautiful line that says, be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am. Be still and know. Be still. Be. And then I feel that beautiful smile forming at the core of my being. I have arrived, I am home, in that awake, loving awareness that is hidden within all of us, that is so grateful that we haven't abandoned it, but yet we are embracing that inner something that longs for us, that longs to live this life that we've been given. And now we are ready, we are willing, and we've set our intention. And everything else is added unto us. How sweet it is. And open your eyes and lift your fingers in the air. Give a little wiggle of the finger. Ah, that's the amen, and so it is.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.